This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
This is Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, the creator of the Liberty Conspiracy, you might say. And thanks for joining us on this program. Well, it's time for us to hit a little something about journalists. The theme comes to us from the 1990s when the Sex Pistols went back on tour for their Filthy Lucre tour. And they did a song called New York. And John Lydon, playing in his old hometown of Finsbury Park, said, "Good evening, Finsbury Park!" And then they ran right through a set of music that was phenomenal. It's a great live record. And he offered this comment before they ripped into the song, which leads us into our first subject.
And a journalist
Any journalists out there? Well, my friends, guess what? Guess what? The Hill is reporting some information about the Washington Post. Oh, you see the headline. Let me bring the music down for you here. Here we go. The Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos, despite the fact that Jeff Bezos was able to support the Washington Post for a long, long time, thanks to CIA contracts. Awesome. Yes, indeed. Washington Post braces for layoffs. Oh, as Kiss would say, oh, no, tears are falling. Oh, I'm so sad. I feel so bad. Oh, and despite the fact that the Portman Murphy, countering foreign propaganda bill, shelled out bunches of money to all the dinosaur news, they're still dying. The Washington Post has been able to attain just half of the job reductions it needs to secure before the end of the year. The newspaper's leadership said this week, sorry, I read that rather clunkily, they've only been able to reduce half the job reductions they need to secure before the end of the year. In a note to staff shared with multiple outlets on Tuesday, Post interim CEO Patty Stonecipher, sounds like something from the Flintstones, Stonecipher. You know, she broke the Enigma code for Fred and Wilma. Yeah, she said in the company memo that they had accepted 120 voluntary buyouts as the corporation, sub-corporation of Amazon, seeks to cut some 240 jobs across its newsroom. Gee, maybe that instinct I had about reading news reports that seemed like they were written by AI, maybe that might be right. I think we know the writing on the wall for the Washington Post, and it's not in what do they call that, Arial font or whatever that stuff is there. The New Times Roman, right? No, the writing on the wall is in Helter Skelter. That's what it is. Oh, man. Hey, by the way, I didn't know until years later that Helter Skelter was really just the slide thing that the Beatles went on, you know, like Paul McCartney went on when he was a kid. The song is about going down a slide and going back up again, Helter Skelter. And then, unfortunately, was sullied and destroyed by the Manson family. Sort of like journalism has been destroyed by many of the pop journalists out there who call themselves journalists. Just for a little taste of something here, and it actually is going to lead us into another story, and you might have seen Don Jeffrey's comment on this. Great, great information. So please recall, don't forget, that when the DNC claimed that it got hacked during that year of the Russian hack narrative myth that they put forward in 2016, with pretty much starting with the Portman Murphy thing and then leading to the NDAA, where the Portman Murphy thing was finally passed in December of 2016 and put into the NDAA for 2017. But it included the DNC so-called hack, which, as I mentioned yesterday, as you probably know, William Binney, who trained Edward Snowden, said that it was not a hack because the data couldn't have been moved that fast over phone lines. It had to have been done internally, and it likely was done by Seth Rich, who contacted WikiLeaks and who died just hours before going over to meet the FBI, because evidently he was going to blow the whistle on some nefarious things that the DNC was doing under Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is, for some strange reason, still a congresswoman from Florida. Despite that fact that as she headed up the DNC, it was revealed that her DNC was favoring Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders, giving Hillary Clinton debate questions that were going to be in a CNN debate that they didn't give to Bernie Sanders. And of course, despite the fact that Debbie Wasserman Schultz had an assistant in her congressional office who got caught just at the airport as he was trying to escape to the Middle East, because of course he was maybe not doing some good things regarding data and money and all sorts of stuff in Washington, D.C. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz got reelected. And, of course, that little sidetrack brings us back to last week when Thomas Massie was, week and a half ago, when Thomas Massie was talking about the proposal that he tried to eliminate that is actually part of a statute that we'll see by 2026. Monitors put into all automobiles, mandated for all the corporations, because the United States is not fascist in any way, as we know, and they will have to have all sorts of gauges on them to tell whether or not we're driving safely or not. It'll be sort of like one of those Rube Goldberg things. It'll be like giant blocks of metal and stuff. It'll be a lot like Brazil, you know? Or it might actually be like, you know, spy monitoring with algorithms and using spy satellites and telemetry and sending information from, you know, computer boxes inside the cars. So anyway, talk about the Flintstones. I'd rather have a Flintstone mobile. So that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and she claimed that it wasn't a kill switch for the cars, which is just euphemism for saying it's not going to do what it actually says it's going to do. So that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She headed up the DNC, but the Washington Post got the exclusive scoop on the DNC so-called hack as they continue to promote this idea that the DNC had been hacked. And I've mentioned this before, the tech reporter for the Washington Post who put out the report about what really happened, supposedly, for the DNC computers. Well, she didn't have to turn to the FBI, you know, which you can see whether or not the FBI could have been trusted at that time either, because, of course, shortly thereafter, they withheld the Hunter Biden laptop and, of course, worked with other intel agencies, supposedly, to promote the fraudulent canard, the faux story that it was had all the earmarks of Russian propaganda campaigns when it didn't, and it was real, and it had a chain of evidence all the way through, and all the way through to the computer guy who was repairing it. Everybody knew this. And in fact, we also know that the FBI asked the New York Times not to promote the truth about it. So whether or not it would have been handled any better by the FBI, the DNC computers, I don't know. But the DNC gave the computers to this guy who ran this organization, this so-called security organization called CrowdStrike. That guy, I think, is like Apervovich or something like that is his name. He's a member. He was at that time a member of the Atlantic Council. He's a deep stater. Highly, highly intimately involved with, later on, the organizations that later on helped overthrow, or actually had earlier overthrown, the government of Ukraine, and, of course, continued the stretch of NATO into Ukraine. That was the guy to whom they gave their computers to CrowdStrike. So that brings us back to the Washington Post, because, as I've mentioned before, I embarked during that summer when CrowdStrike released its report. The Washington Post beat everybody to the gate on the report. And it was this, I can't remember her name, was Ang or Wang or something like that, writing for the Washington Post. And she had a 2,000-word report. And I'm sorry if you've heard me talk about this before on the show, but if you're new, maybe this will be new information for you. You may want to pass it on to somebody. The day it was released, the Washington Post, the company CrowdStrike released their press release at 9 in the morning. Before noontime, the Washington, before I think it was like 11 o'clock, it was like 2 hours later, the Washington Post's reporter had a 2,000-word piece. And I know it was because I copied and pasted it into a Word document and did the word count on it. It was a 2,000-word piece about how CrowdStrike had determined that it was hacked by Russia. And it wasn't done. It was not possible. Not possible. Just like all that ridiculous fantasy that the Russians had influenced the election with, what, a $4,000 buy that it was, you don't even know if it was the Russian government buy of stuff on Facebook. That's what it was. No, how about the United States government and the FBI and various groups with which the FBI worked influenced the election? How about the DNC influenced the primaries when it wasn't supposed to? How about CNN also worked with the DNC to influence the primaries through handing the DNC their questions, which the DNC then fed to Hillary Clinton, which was exposed likely not by the Russians, but by Seth Rich. And if we get right into it, this report that was reported by the Washington Post, there's no possible way a 2,000-word piece can come out 2 hours after CrowdStrike releases its press release. But the Washington Post beat everybody. Everybody else, it was later in the afternoon, but the Washington Post was before noontime. Why? Because the Washington Post had the inside track with CrowdStrike, I suspect, because the Washington Post was owned by Jeff Bezos, and because Jeff Bezos had the CIA data contracts before Amazon moved in. So that's what I think was going on. I think the Washington Post for a long time, even going back to the 70s, I think the Washington Post had the inside track with the deep state when they wanted to get rid of Nixon. So the Washington Post, deep throat, gave this information to the Washington Post. And of course, Woodward and Bernstein were made household names when all it really was a way to try to get rid of Nixon with that information. There's plenty of other things that people have done in the presidency that could have knocked them out as well. I'm not saying Nixon, what he did was white or clean or anything like that. But the Washington Post has been a deep state shill for years. And this idea that they can release a 2,000-word article in that amount of time, that she can write it and get it out there, get it seen by the editor and the legal department before noontime, not happening. Not happening at all. She clearly had the report the night before, and she wrote it the night before, at least the night before. So the Washington Post putting out the layoffs. Well, all right. That sounds okay to me. Yes, indeed. Wowie, wow, wow. And you know, everybody, that actually reminds me. You know, we had the opportunity to go into some pretty interesting stuff yesterday about the Secretary of Education. What's his name? We'll get into that. We'll get into that in just a minute. Let me go to this other one. We get another theme. Okay, here we go. I want to hit you with this one. Here we go, everybody. You know it. Such questions, it's so hard to tell. All right, here's a quick one, one and all, and it has to do with one of America's favorites, Rachel Levine. Oh, man, Rachel Levine right there. Here's the headline from Fox News. DOJ fails to stop Rachel Levine's emails being exposed in litigation over Alabama's sex change ban for minors. This actually is a weird one. We're going to touch on this lightly, give it to you quick. Here it is. Biden DOJ attempt to block Alabama sex change for minors forces Rachel Levine into litigation. What? The Department of Justice's attempt to stop Alabama's ban on sex change procedures and medications for transgender minors has forced Assistant Secretary for Health and Human Services, Dr. Rachel Levine, otherwise known as Richard, into litigation after a judge recently compelled the transgender official to become a custodian in the case. What is this? This is very interesting. Alabama's Attorney General, Steve Marshall, is in the process of defending litigation against an Alabama law that made it a felony, punishable by up to 10 years in prison, to prescribe puberty blockers or hormones to transgender children for a sex change. So they're already assuming on Fox News that children can be transgender, that humans can be transgender. No, sorry. You can have a mental problem and think that you're not in the right body, but you're not transgender. I'm sorry. Doesn't work like that. And, of course, these are children. So, again, we get into this question that I brought up once before, which is, if you're going to have a state, and the state is supposed to be there to stop people from harming each other, but at the same time, you want to allow parental control over families without state meddling, then where does the government draw the line? You've got a constitution, you've got equal protection under the law, but you've got people who are not yet of age to be their own guardians. So parents are the ones who are supposed to control this, right? That's what I thought. Well, what happens if the parents think it's okay to have their children undergo this therapy? Is that so-called therapy, this body mutilation? Is that acceptable? Or is it seen as violence? I don't know. But what's quite interesting about this is Rachel Levine did not want emails released that had to do with communications about kids and so-called gender. Isn't that interesting? How do we deal with that? Well, let's find out, shall we? Let's look at a little bit more on this one. This is very interesting. This is the Steve Marshall is in the process of defending litigation against an Alabama law that made it a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison to prescribe puberty blockers or hormones to transgender children for a so-called sex change and so-called transgenders. The Department of Justice requested to be a party in a lawsuit against this Alabama law. Okay, so that's the next step. And that was the mistake that brings in Rachel Levine, because the state is now requesting Levine's own records going way back. So they opened themselves up to it. The Justice Department, so-called, of the Biden administration just made Levine's records vulnerable. So here it is. The Department of Justice requested to be a party in a lawsuit against the Alabama law blocking sex changes for minors, otherwise known as bodily mutilation, making some federal officials subject to discovery. Discovery is a procedure during litigation in which parties present and request evidence before trial. Marshall then requested Levine's records, believing he is one of the primary voices in the federal government and relevantly in the Health and Human Services Department, which should not exist on the federal level, who is advocating for sex changes for children with so-called gender dysphoria. The DOJ then tried to block that request and offered Levine's former subordinate instead for discovery, and also offered a FOIA response with unrelated search terms, the filing continued. So, very clearly, in Alabama, they asked for a FOIA request, or they had made a FOIA request, or somebody attached to the lawsuit did, and they didn't even provide the right answers on FOIA from the Justice Department. That's the Justice Department for you. You keep paying. It's just. However, a court ruled on November 17th that it, quote, finds that Admiral Levine's emails are relevant, given that Admiral Levine is a public official. Yeah. Here's what Attorney General Marshall said. I am glad the court granted our motion to require HHS to search Admiral Levine's emails for documents relevant to our defense of Alabama's law. We look forward to reviewing the documents HHS produces as we continue to defend Alabama's children. The DOJ declined to comment, and the HHS has yet to respond for comment. Levine has been one of the most vocal voices in the federal government when it comes to transgender issues, the attorney general continued. And, of course, arguing that the U.S. military and your taxes should pay for people to get so-called gender-affirming treatment like hormone replacements and hormone changes and bodily mutilation. This is very interesting. It says there is no doubt that they continue. Marshall said Levine has been, DOJ saying this. Levine has been at the forefront of the Biden administration's, this is Marshall. Marshall says Levine has been at the forefront of the Biden administration's reckless promotion of sex modification procedures for children. There is no doubt about that, nor about the Admiral's close involvement with radical organizations like WPATH, whose standards of care mandate, issue mandates for the use of sterilizing hormones and surgeries to treat vulnerable children. All right, so again, we get to the concept of decentralization, real federalism, and the idea that at least on a state level, if you don't like what your state is doing, you can get out. Stay tuned for more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to produce an endless supply of nano-sized silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. Silver Lungs. With the addition of our unique lung delivery system, respiratory infections are targeted directly, where traditional oral administration simply cannot reach. This pioneering method also preserves the original particle sizes and delivers your silver solution directly into the bloodstream. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
USA News Update. A federal appeals court Friday allowed lawsuits against Donald Trump over the U.S. Capitol riot to proceed. The court dismissed Trump's claims of presidential immunity. Friday, the House took a decisive vote and expelled Republican Representative George Santos of New York. Before that vote, he spoke with Fox News.
If it's their choice to change precedent and loop me in with three Confederate turncoats who are expelled for treason, so I'll be the first person to get expelled from Congress without a conviction or without committing treason.
He's only the sixth member in the history of the chamber to be removed by his colleagues. A devoted University of Michigan graduate is suing the state after losing his cherished Go Blue license plate. Joseph Hartig III, a suburban Detroit lawyer, said the plate had sentimental value passed down from his late father. When he attempted to renew it, he found it was assigned to another car owner. John Schaefer, USA News.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327 or advertise at gcnlive.com. That's advertise at gcnlive.com.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It's Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, your host, and thank you for joining us. I'm the creator of The Liberty Conspiracy, which you can find every Monday through Friday live starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you want to get involved and watch and chat, hit us up on Rumble or look us up on Rockfin. Of course, both under the title Liberty Conspiracy. You can also listen or watch on my Twitter feed when we go live, and that is at Gard Goldsmith. That's G-A-R-D Goldsmith. If you don't like what your state is doing, you can get out, right? I would prefer further decentralization. Again, these questions on where does parental control stop and parental abuse begin? Where can you hire out a doctor to give therapy to a child, to give, say, aspirin to a child to relieve X, Y, or the Z that you think is suffering? But where do other people come in to say, no, this child is not suffering sufficiently that you can give X, Y, or Z hormones because that's going to cause permanent damage? All of these questions are not questions that I feel that I am going to force my neighbor to pay for. It's not whether or not I have opinions on that. It's whether or not I can force my opinions on another person and make him or her pay for the system to police that. That's the question. All the other stuff is academic. Absolutely, I have very strong opinions about this, but when it comes to the morality of the state, that is very easy to answer. Regardless of my opinions do not give me the right to force somebody else to pay for what I prefer or what I think is right, because that is engaging in aggression. That's why I'm an anarchist, one of the major reasons. Now, talk about abuse of children. It's time for us to move into a follow-up from yesterday's show, everybody. And for that, we turn to the wonderful, awesome people of Pink Floyd. We need a theme. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I think...
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasms in the classrooms.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Teach to leave them kids alone.
Still haven't seen this movie. Let me know if you think this movie's good. Drop your comments in Rockfin Chat or Rumble Chat if you like The Wall.
All in all, it's just a brick in the wall.
And of course... I'm sure that all of you, every single one of you out there knows that Roger Waters, when he performs segments of The Wall, is not engaging in anti-Semitism or in criticism of the state of Israel from the themes of the movie. The themes of the movie are anti-fascist. His father was killed in World War II fighting Nazis. The Star of David on the pig that is in his live shows that floats around in the sky has to do, I think, with the State of Israel's Zionism expanding into Gaza, or it has to do with the fact that the Nazis looked at the Jews as being the money changers, and scapegoated their poor economic system after World War I. They scapegoated the Jews because the Jews didn't conform to the New Testament, which forbids lending on interest. The Jews only go with the Old Testament, which doesn't forbid lending on interest. Usury is not forbidden there. So the bankers, generally speaking, in Germany were mostly Jewish people. So they were easy targets for people who blamed the bankers for their economic hardships, right? Very clearly. So let's talk a little bit about what happened yesterday. As we know, education so-called secretary Cardona, and thanks for the positive vibes about remembering what my dad did. Got some nice messages on that as well. Yes, he was there with Charlotte Isherby, and they met Sam Blumenfeld. They were in Washington to try to dismantle the education department just a couple of years after Carter started it. When Reagan came in, my dad was hired to go down there, and both my father and Charlotte left. And they dropped their salaries. They dropped their paychecks. They said, we're not changing anything, and we're just getting people's tax money. This is not right. And they both left. And my dad had a family to support, and he quit. So it was an amazing thing. And he and Charlotte stayed friends for many years until my father died. And it was great to hear him. You know, he would always say, well, if you need a recommendation on doing research, Gard, contact Sam Blumenfeld or Charlotte Isby. She's really good. He's down in near Boston. She's in Maine. I was like, oh, thanks, Dad. Very cool. And I didn't realize that, you know, they were so well known nationally. So that was kind of nice to see that people admired their work so much. But we saw that the Secretary of Education, Cardona, misquoted Reagan. We don't know whether or not that was intentional. I have no idea whether it was intentional. But I want to give you this, a very good piece from the very fine folks at John Stossel's Twitter feed. So let me show this to you. I think you'll find this pretty darn interesting. And just pull this back here because they actually cover some positive stuff.
With progressive ideals.
So let's take yesterday's absurdity and, again, recommend something to folks just in case you might want to look for some information about the difference between the government trying to decide for everybody what is going to fit for education and homeschooling. And, again, it goes to that question of, well, who decides what is okay for the child? The parents? Well, if we don't trust the parents to take care of their own kids, then how can we trust the parents to vote for a politician and they're not the kids of the politician and somehow the politician is going to make a better decision with all the input and special interests that the politician now controls, and they have no competition, government schools. They can basically ban anybody they want and get as much money as they want. Well, the only escape for many people for many years, as Sam Blumenfeld recommended, was homeschooling. Well, John Stossel and the folks at Mises both released good positive vibes on this. I want to show you this, folks. You probably are very well aware of these vibes, but it's good to reiterate. And if you're new to the question government spheres and circles, our circle of friends, our family, here we go.
Episode 3, Public School versus Homeschooling.
By the way, this is Mises Media. Great stuff from Mises Media.
In 2019, Harvard Law professor Elizabeth Bartholet published an article calling for a presumptive ban on homeschooling, which she believed conflicted with progressive ideals.
Looks like Liz
homeschooling
Warren.
Homeschooling presents both academic and democratic concerns, she argued. Public education makes children aware of important cultural values and provides skills enabling them to participate productively in their communities and the larger society through various forms of civic engagement. Even homeschooling parents capable of satisfying the academic function of education are not likely to be capable of satisfying the democratic function. Bartholet published her condemnation of homeschooling as faith in America's public school system was plummeting, yet she neglected to provide any comparative analysis. So how do the two systems stack up? Following progressive educational theories, the federal government began exerting more authority over education in the 20th century, imposing national standardized testing in 1965 and establishing a federal education bureaucracy, the Department of Education, in 1979. In the 21st century, both George W. Bush's No Child Left Behind and Barack Obama's Common Core demanded federal funding, bureaucratic oversight, and standardized testing for public schools. Since 1970, the results have been dismal. The government massively increased educational expenditures, resulting in the expansion of school administration, which has vastly outpaced the growth of both students and teachers. Today, taxpayers spend more than $15,000 per public school student, yet test scores have largely flatlined, and in some areas, even declined. These results became especially concerning after No Child Left Behind.
Just to pause it there, folks. At this point, 1994, right there in the graph, I just want to mention to you that in 1994, the Scholastic Aptitude Test people changed a lot of things for the SATs so that you can't even compare SATs after 1994 to SATs before 1994. They changed the amount of time that kids got to take the tests, whether it be the reading and writing test or the math test, comprehension, essays, any of that stuff. All of it was changed. They made the math questions easier, and then eventually they allowed kids to bring calculators in. So there's no quantitative or qualitative way that anyone can compare before and after 1994. That, I think, clearly was done as a way to allow the abysmally performing government, public government-run school systems to claim that they were getting improvement. But even with the change, as you can see, they actually didn't get improvement. They could only claim that it hadn't gone down. Let's continue.
Tied school funding to test scores, pressuring teachers to devote more time to teaching the test at the expense of other subjects. While public school test scores are dropping, homeschooled students, by contrast, score consistently as much as 30 percentile points above the national average. The difference exists even when comparisons are between students from households with similar economic and education levels. Why the disparity? Parents who are involved in and spend discretionary money on their children's education are more likely to want good results. In the public school system, bureaucrats spend anonymous tax money to fund a factory-modeled system for everyone. But homeschoolers aren't just better students. Although socialization is the most commonly cited benefit of public education in comparison to homeschooling, homeschoolers significantly outperform their public school peers when tested for social, emotional, and psychological development. With all the claims that the public school environment promotes social development, it is puzzling how public schools group children according to their age, creating an environment where students interact almost exclusively with children at the same level of maturity and with little resemblance to real life. Far from being isolated, homeschoolers enjoy greater opportunity to socialize with people of all ages. Homeschool co-ops, for example, bring students together for group lessons, often taught by parents with expertise in the subject, as well as field trips, sports, and musical education. Unfortunately, many families that would prefer to homeschool simply can't afford to withdraw their children from public schools. The result are families being victimized twice, being forced to finance the very schools they would prefer to leave.
Good stuff, good stuff. And I got to say, you know, folks, looking at a video like that, I think it's important to bring up something else, too, which is, you know, as we ask these questions, and they pop up a lot, they pop up all the time when we look at issues of federalism, state rights. You look at the trans, so-called trans kid therapy thing with that Rachel Levine story in Alabama, how much power is parental power, and so on and so forth. Especially when we get into the education stuff, it becomes very, very easy to decipher this. One of the things that I almost always try to do, at least a few times a day, is to pause and see whether or not I've used the term we. Because that is the forced inclusion. That is the pronoun of aggression of the state. We, our, right? And so one of the things that I notice is people will say, well, how do we address education? How do we address problems of, you know, do we allow this or that? It's not up to me. The minute I say, what should we do about education, about a child's education, that immediately means that I'm forcing somebody else into it. It should be up to the parents. The question of whether or not homeschooling is better than government schooling is also a bit of a misdirection. Even though it is, that's a consequentialist point of view. What if it weren't? The point is, it's not my right, it's not my place to make somebody else educate his or her child the way I want that child educated. But moreover, even if one says, well, what if the parents are putting the kid into a cult or abusing the child or something like that? The state paradigm somehow assumes that it's okay for me, not the point that people typically see, that it's okay for me to form a group to stop that predation on the child. That's not the question. The question is, because it's the state, do I have a right to take some third party and attach him to me to say, I am going to make you pay for what I think is appropriate to tell those parents to stop doing what they're doing? Because I think they've reached a threshold. They're Mormons, they're Quakers, they're cultists, whatever it might be. They're abusing the child more or something like that, right? They've tied the child up. I hear screaming inside. What do I do? Well, even if I've reached a point where I say, I think I can recognizably say that the parents are mistreating that child, I don't have a right to take somebody else and say, now you must do what I say, and you too must pay for the protection of that child. I don't have that right, because now I'm assuming that I can engage in aggression based on my threshold of what is acceptable or not acceptable for somebody else, which means somebody can do it to me. Hence, we get all the way across the planet to the Middle East in a debate about Israel and Gaza. Who's right? Who's wrong? I don't know, and I can't figure it out. But the least I can figure out is that in not knowing how that should be resolved, in thinking, I think the Zionists have been pretty aggressive, I'm still not going to take that extra step to say, I know what's right, so now I can use the force of the state to tell my neighbor to pay for what I think is right. It doesn't work that way. The entire concept of police protection for children assumes much too much, and people skip that because it's the, what do we do about parents who are abusing kids with their sex therapy things or their bad education things? Well, who draws the line, right? And again, if you're asking, well, how are we going to protect kids? Well, that's a consequentialist thought. It's not up to you to decide how you are going to protect somebody else's kids if it means that you are assuming we for somebody else. It doesn't work that way. That's aggression. That is conceit, arrogance, and hubris, all of which are utterly, utterly poisonous. And people constantly get into this behavior. And it grows and grows. That's how you get the Department of Education. Because the small differences are not allowable. You got to protect against the small differences. Then you have smaller groups. And that's not allowable because the collectivists say, well, we can't trust the small groups. Again, it's internally inconsistent because if you can't trust the parents to take care of their own children with their own love, how can you trust parents from all over the place to vote to take care of other kids and have an establishment to do it? That's logically inconsistent. So that's between the practical outcome and the immoral start of it, right? It's logically unsupportable anyway. It falls on its own weight. Now, by the way, one thing, we know I was talking about Seth Rich before. I want to give you this one just to make sure that I've got this for you. According to the post-millennial, the FBI is going to be required to hand over the laptop owned by Seth Rich. It's a FOIA request. I should have brought this up earlier. Apologize. I was talking about the Seth Rich stuff. In fact, I was going to make that a transition. I just jumped right into the next issue. Judge Amos Mazant of the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Texas ruled that the FBI has to release the laptop, siding with Brian Huddleston. What's this all about? On Tuesday, a judge ordered that the Federal Bureau of Investigation hand over the laptop that belonged to Seth Rich, the 27-year-old Democrat National Committee staffer who was shot and killed on July 10, 2016, while walking back to his Washington, D.C. home. Of course, that was in the early morning. A few hours after that, he was supposed to go to the FBI. Judge Amos Mazant, and don't forget, you know, Seymour Hersh has mentioned that it's his strong belief as well that Seth Rich was already talking with the folks at WikiLeaks, and Julian Assange has implied as much. Judge Amos Mazant of the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Texas ruled that the FBI had to release the laptop, siding with Brian Huddleston, the man who filed a lawsuit against the FBI for failing to provide the material after he submitted a Freedom of Information Act request. He goes through the memorandum of order. According to Just the News, Texas resident Huddleston filed the FOIA requests in both 2017 and 2020 with the FBI related to his investigation into Rich's murder. You see how long they delayed. They wouldn't release it. Now, whether there's anything still on it, I don't know. But Don Jeffries makes a really good point, and he brought up the point that Seth Rich's family did an about-face for some reason and didn't want to talk to anybody about it, even though Seth Rich's murder doesn't seem to be random in any way. It didn't seem like it was a robbery in any way whatsoever because they left an expensive watch and his wallet. 2022 ruling from Mazant stated that the FBI had improperly withheld information with regard to Seth Rich's laptop, and they had it in their possession. While police have maintained that Rich was murdered during a botched robbery, some have attempted to claim that his death was somehow connected to the Democrat Party. As NPR reports, his parents settled a lawsuit with Fox News in 2020 over its role in pushing the original claims that Seth Rich was murdered. I don't understand why they would do that. Wouldn't they want it investigated? Wouldn't they want their son's death investigated? How troubling can it be to have an investigation into your son's death? I don't know. Very strange stuff. Very, very strange. Now, final thing I want to give you in our news flash, and it comes by way of Thomas Massey. And there are a couple things on Thomas Massey that I want to mention. One of them I'm going to give you later, but I do want to bring this up. And and there's another brief one, too, that I want to give to you. Some very good news about Michael Schellenberger. Obviously, you know that we've been covering a lot of Michael Schellenberger's investigations here. But Thomas Massey noted this about the jabs. We talk about those jabs in Poland and so on. In the United States, he says, not only does our government still have a COVID so-called vaccine mandate in place for those wishing to become U.S. citizens, it appears that it just morphed into a booster mandate. This is unscientific and unnecessary. My bill, H.R. 4726, would end this mandate. Yeah, good job. And, of course, Thomas Massey wants to allow people the freedom that they should be able to have if they're raising cattle, that they could slaughter the cattle on their own farms rather than having to farm them out to giant slaughterhouses. I mean, just amazing, the stuff that the federal government gets involved with the USDA and the FDA and all that other nonsense. It's just crazy, you know? How in the world, let's just say, you know, even if people thought that it was a better thing to have, you know, some giant agri conglomerates handling the slaughtering, to have the big wigs getting all the business because they could have the government make the laws up that make the small guys have to ship their cattle someplace else. What about the Fourth Amendment? How about that? How about that? Where does the government get off inspecting farms? Government agents aren't supposed to enter private property unless they have warrants. It's just amazing. And the excuse that they give is, well, we just won't let you sell over state borders. Well, what happens if they do? What are you going to do? Yeah, you're going to come after them with your government guns. That's what you're going to do. Yeah, you got to watch them. You got to surveil people, right? Well, the Fourth Amendment supposedly protects us from that stuff. Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live will continue.
It's obvious. The unthinkable continues. Most Americans know something very wrong is happening. People in charge keep telling you that everything's fine and to stop noticing. But you know better. That's why self-reliant folks are investing in emergency food storage. You should too. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, are the ones you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $200 on each 3-month food kit you purchase. My Patriot Supply also sells solar generators, gravity-powered water filters, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship that same day and arrive quickly on your doorstep in unmarked boxes. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. Time is running out to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.